meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coy's here with you again on a brain-wrinkling Wednesday. Hope you're doing well. And it's a beautiful summer day.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, it's brain wrinkling time. But no matter what time you're listening to this, if it's the noon hour or on a podcast, remember, almost every phone and computer will have a podcast app. You got to go to.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
You don't need that big of a computer, though. We may need a bigger boat, but. You go to Podbean and look for Winds of Change Show, Winds of Change Show, and all 5 days of our noon to one broadcast hour will be there. And might I put in a plug for our Wednesday brain wrinkling time together? Anyways, show me the money. Well, yeah, you could show me the money, but primarily we're here to show you the truth. I really think this topic is very important. I started it last week, the topic of the Spanish Inquisition, and actually you can expand that to the myth of the shall we say the hard hand of Catholicism. It's always been a criticism of non-Catholics and Catholics alike, that Catholicism is especially heavy-handed. When you try to study and look at the full history, you realize that the church often is trying to hold back the heavy-handedness of civil authorities, though at times the church steps in and has her own type of heavy-handedness. Strictness. Yeah, that's a crazy thing. But when studying the Spanish Inquisition, and I'm using a wonderful article by Thomas Madden that came my way, I think it was in Crisis Magazine. Yeah, it's really worth this topic is worth studying. As a matter of fact, I was with my dear precious 94-year-old mother, and we all often look for movies to watch. And so I stumbled on The Man of La Mancha, Don Quixote, The Man of La Mancha. And I said, oh, we got to watch this. It's a version that many of us probably know. It's actually one of the only versions I know until I searched the internet. And there are a lot of other versions of Don Quixote. As a matter of fact, the book Don Quixote by Cervantes is, I believe, and I have to confess, I haven't read that whole book, but in watching the movie's one of my favorite movies. It's one of my favorite plays and dramas. It highlights the themes of idealism and love. A human love, pure and chaste from afar, not the corrupt form of love, you know, as Don Quixote liberates, redeems, elevates Eldonza, the kitchen maid into his maid, his virginal maiden to whom he dedicates all his battles and all. One of my favorite scenes in it is when Don Quixote's talking to Dulcinea or Aldonza, and she doesn't really believe him, and she says, what do you want? And he says, nothing. And she says, you lie. And then he says, well rebuked, I do want something. And she says, now we're getting somewhere. And she thinks he's like all men, and all he wants is to get her in the sack, as it were. And he says, I want to dedicate my battles to you. I want to serve you. I want to be able to think of you. And if I'm dying on the battlefield, I want to say your name with my dying breath. And that's where she starts to soften, as it were. So anyways, it's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful play that reminds us of the...
Yeah, boy, you just wrinkled my brain, man.
That is brain wrinkle. I recommend that movie and the play if you ever get a chance to see Don Quixote de la Mancha. But the one thing I have to say is, of course, if you've seen it with Peter O'Toole and Sophia Loren, they start the movie with the Spanish Inquisition, and Don Quixote or Cervantes is thrown into prison, and he's in there because he's an accused heretic. And so I have to, I'm going to see if I could I'm going to try to read that book. I have this sense, and after I get to read it, I'll come back to you and see. But it is one of those epic long novels. I have this sense that it wasn't as, and the book itself by Cervantes was not as anti-Catholic as the movie puts it in the context of the Spanish Inquisition. First of all, as we're going to find out in Thomas Mann's historical analysis of the Inquisition was primarily, almost exclusively, for the Jewish conversos. We'll get to that. And the man in the movie does not seem at all like a Jewish conversos. If he is, there's nothing said about it. He's actually portrayed a little bit more as a Protestant heretic, though it's not stated exactly. And so it's left a little ambiguous, as often. So it makes me think, and us Catholic Americans, we have to be especially attentive to the fact that we live in a culture that really has a lot of Protestant parameters, Protestant principles, Protestant ideology that has influenced our Catholicism. We'll say it that way. And I even think the clinging to the almost universally accepted doctrine of the separation of church and state comes to mind. The doctrine of this separation of church and state is in essence more, it's thought of as more of a Protestant principle, though they didn't live it very well. What I mean by that is when Protestants said we should have a separation of church and state, what they first meant was a separation of our state government from Catholicism. Let's separate from Catholicism. But as soon as they separated from Catholicism and they sort of won that battle, as it were, almost all Protestant states took to marriage between church and state, as a matter of fact, and they always looked for a state to protect their religion. And that's why oftentimes G.K. Chesterton often criticized Protestant denominations by being overly nationalistic. And I say that with a bit of caution because nationalism has its own bad taste today, and being patriotic and love of your country is something that I certainly profess. Catholicism has always pushed love of country and the duty of being patriotic. It's just that when put in the context of faith in Jesus Christ, you have to be loyal to not only your country, but to all those who are the universal family of man, and especially those who embrace Christ, embrace Catholicism. G.K. Chesterton, I think it's C.S. Lewis. I'm getting my Catholic or my apologists confused. It's in G.K. Chesterton's Orthodoxy that he has a chapter called The Flag of the World. Being a loyal Catholic has us be loyal to a flag that is universal. And he calls it the flag of the world, as opposed to the flag of your particular nation. But the flag of the world, that is Catholicism, doesn't teach you to be anti-national, but that something deep in your heart should realize that it's a step toward the kingdom, right?
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It is brain wrinkling, you know? And that's why Catholic churches so often, well, here in the United States, will have the American flag and the papal flag in the sanctuary. And some military people and those who have been in the armed forces, of course, I remember having a big argument with a veteran about how the flags should be in the sanctuary. And I think I had, we had an altar that was up on kind of a hill, you know, with three or four steps. And papal flag happened to be up on a higher step than the American flag. And a veteran said that the American flag should always be the highest. Now, in my heart of hearts, I said to myself, no, the papal flag should be the highest because it represents the universal loyalty that Christ is King, King of Kings, Lord of Lords. I didn't want to fight that battle because part of the Catholic spirit is almost a kind of bending over backwards to helping those who are trying to better their own country, their national pride, you know, though especially veterans who have died fighting for their country. But of course, there's veteran Catholics who have died fighting for the flag of the world. We call them martyrs, right? Anyways, so I want to get back to Thomas Madden's. We got to get the true story of the Spanish Inquisition. So, as is often the case, we can start with a little sense of humor here. Last week, in the first installment of my podcast on the Inquisition, I played the first part of Monty Python's Spanish Inquisition. Now we can hear the second part. This is a little grandmother sharing her photo album of her family, and it's like her granddaughter or niece or someone is there. She's bored out of her gourd until we get, and again, this is English humor, and everyone who likes Monty Python or appreciates any kind of British humor knows how they lampoon and make fun of not only themselves, but others as well. And yet, hidden in the humor against the Inquisition is that Protestant prejudice against Catholicism that maintains a myth. Maintains a, I'll call it the ABC syndrome. Maybe you've heard me talk about that again. The ABC syndrome, that is the anything but Catholicism. When you're striving to find something better or look deeper into the questions of life. You explore everything but Catholicism, and no one expects the Spanish Inquisition lampoon or comical look really has infiltrated, shall we say, our mind and our concept. Here we go. We'll listen to a little of this script of Monty Python before we go into our first break, and then we'll come back with Thomas Madden and the more historical. This is how it goes.
This is the back of the house, with Uncle Ted coming round the side to the front. And this is the Spanish Inquisition hiding behind the coal shed. Oh, I didn't expect the Spanish Inquisition.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition!
Then, of course, they show the beheadings and hangings.
In the early years of the 16th century, to combat the rising tide of religious unorthodoxy, the Pope gave Cardinal Jiménez of Spain leave to move without let or hindrance throughout the land in a reign of violence, terror, and torture that makes a smashing film. This was the Spanish Inquisition.
So that's how Monty Python approaches, and that sense of humor that is, as you're going to see from Thomas Madden's article, so false and perpetuating such a anti-Catholic twist to it that it just reeks, as it were. I could laugh a little bit, but underneath my laughing is a desire to get to the truth. So anyways... Let us take a quick break here. I am Father Tom Coyce. You are listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through eighth grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coyce here to wrinkle your brain a little bit, and wrinkling your brain, especially if you have swallowed the blue pill of the black legend. That's the phrase we use when referring to the myths that everything from Spain must be bad. That's because we live in a land where we speak English and we have a great deal of cultural ideology, courtesy of the wonderful United Kingdom. And today we have to consider them great allies and very important partners in the world stage and dramas today. But when you look back in history, there was a great deal of desire to, on the part of from those from England, to paint everything Spanish as bad. And front and center is the Inquisition, as it were. Though you don't even know of the French Inquisition, the English Inquisition, the Italian Inquisition, probably because Monty Python hasn't done any shows on those. But those countries especially also had inquisitions of their own. And as we look to the data, we look to the facts, we find that the Spanish Inquisition was one of the most tolerant and most rational and balanced against the other kinds of inquisitions that were going on. So let's go back here to Thomas Mann's article. He says most people accused of heresy by the medieval Inquisition were either acquitted of their sentences or suspended of their sentences. Those found guilty of grave error were allowed to confess their sin, do penance, and be restored to the body of Christ. The underlying assumption of the Inquisition was that, like lost sheep, heretics had simply strayed. If, however, an inquisitor
My Lord, such destruction.
There was some destruction, but not as much as we are led to believe. If, however, an inquisitor determined that a particular sheep had purposely departed out of a hostility to the flock, there was nothing more that could be done. Unrepentant and obstinate heretics were excommunicated and given over to the secular authorities. Now, that phrase is the important part, given over to the secular authorities. So the church didn't execute anyone. It's kind of like, reminds you of the Jewish Sanhedrin and Pharisees in the Gospels about Jesus when they said, we have no authority to put a man to death. You had to go to the state, the civil powers, to get a man executed. So it was, even in the Middle Ages, the church still had no authority to execute people. They had to go to the civil authorities. So, but here we go. Despite the popular myth, the church did not burn heretics. It was the secular authorities that held heresy to be a capital offense. So, in other words, instead of blaming religious authorities, we have to blame civil authorities. The simple fact is that the medieval Inquisition saved uncounted thousands of innocent or even not so innocent people who would otherwise have been roasted by secular lords and mob rule. Why mob rule? You could see how that plays into our consciousness of today. The little reference that Joe Biden had to white supremacy being the greatest threat to our peace just the other day points to he's trying to open people's minds to the vicious motivations and actions of the mob, though even the January 6th event pales in comparison to the summer of riots and the incredible mob rule that's going on, not only in our big cities but throughout the world, as it were. So, once again, remember, the more history changes, the more stays the same. Indeed, so. The powerful medieval popes, they did extend and sophisticate the Inquisition. They wanted it to be better. They introduced the Franciscans and Dominicans in the early 1200s in order to make the Inquisition more just, more charitable, more reasonable. Because the Dominicans founded their order to debate with the heretics, especially the Albigensians, and when Luther and company started Protestant denominations, Dominicans took to the debating fields and won many, many converts, as it were. These new inquisitors followed the most progressive law codes of the day. The Church of the 1200s formed tribunals which were answerable to Rome rather than local bishops. You know, that's still something that we even have today. When a parish, for instance, has, or even an individual priest has a problem with the local bishop, oftentimes the parish or the local person will appeal to Rome. And actually, that's one of the things Pope Francis changed with annulments. Maybe you know this or maybe you don't, but it's actually one of the things I don't mind that Pope Francis liberalized something, though if situations were different and changed, I might change my thoughts and mind about that. What I'm referring to is when somebody gets an annulment, it's always given by a diocesan or archdiocesan tribunal. And so a verdict is handed down, and there has always been the passing on of the verdict to a different diocese. As a matter of fact, if you got an annulment from the Archdiocese of Chicago, it often might have been passed to the Joliet Diocese. So some canon lawyers would review it, and I would say almost never the Second Court of Appeals, they called it, would just rubber stamp what the first tribunal said. But there has always been then the ability to appeal to Rome, even for an annulment case, but Pope Francis, in the interest of speeding up the annulment cases, eliminated the necessity of sending that annulment case to a second diocese. A canon lawyer or a person could appeal to Rome. Don't know if that goes very far or how often that happens, but it's possible. And in that context, I have to say, it is so easy to get annulments today. It sometimes hurts. I feel torn oftentimes when somebody comes to me with a very difficult marriage situation, or they're already divorced, and I always try for reconciliation. Can't this marriage be saved? You out there who may know certain situations, and it's amazing that sometimes people who are divorced and separated will, if they become much closer to God and they really get closer to the Lord, will sometimes get back together again. I consider that one of the amazing miracles of the faith. It's a spiritual, it's a moral miracle as opposed to a medical miracle. So, okay. Back to the Spanish Inquisition. let's see. To ensure fairness and uniformity, manuals were written for inquisitorial officials. Bernard Guy, best known today as the fanatical and evil inquisitor in the movie The Name of the Rose, wrote a particularly influential manual. There is no reason to believe that Guy was anything like his fictional portrayal. Well, wouldn't you know it, I happen to have that fictional portrayal here, and it goes like this. This is from, these are monks who are writing the manuscripts, and they see a mouse, and there's the gi. A monk should not laugh, only solemn talking. So here's gi.
Persons laughing at laughable things. You Franciscans, however, belong to an order where merriment is viewed with indulgence.
Yes, it's true. St. Francis was much disposed to laughter.
Laughter is a devilish wind, which deforms the lineaments of the face and makes men look like monkeys.
Monkeys do not laugh. Laughter is particular to man.
As a sin. Christ never laughed.
Can we be so sure?
There is nothing in the scriptures to say that he did.
And there's nothing in the scriptures to say that he did not. Why, even the saints have been known to employ comedy to ridicule the enemies of the faith. For example, when the pagans plunged St. Maurus into the boiling water, he complained that his bath was too cold, the sultan put his hand in and scalded himself.
A saint immersed in boiling water does not play childish tricks. He restrains his cries and suffers for the truth.
And yet, Aristotle devoted his second book of Poetics to comedy as an instrument of truth.
So you sort of get the idea, no? This is the black legend par excellence in the movie The Name of the Rose, and there's Bernard Guy as a stuck-up, poor representation of a true Dominican as a part of the Inquisition. Boy, I'm not getting through this article by Thomas Madden too quickly. I'm getting sidetracked quite a bit, but it's time for our next break, and we will come back and try to learn more about the true history of the Inquisition. This is Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stan's needs your help. We are forming a group of volunteers called St. Stan's Cares to help parish and school families in times of need. To join the group or learn more, please contact Brian at 312-343-3222, and we will plan an upcoming virtual meeting to discuss the details. Almsgiving, it's one of the three pillars of Lent. Volunteer with St. Stan's Cares as a means of almsgiving.
We are the students of St. Stan LaCosta Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through eighth grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
Oh, hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coyes here. We are trying to get a truer look at the Inquisition, following a wonderful article by Thomas Madden. And he tells us, as the power of kings was increasing in the Middle Ages, and it was the secular rulers who strongly supported the Inquisition because they saw it as an efficient way to ensure the religious health of their kingdoms. They had a positive disposition about religion, especially Catholicism, for their kingdoms. And actually, as Protestantism grew and nations became, so to speak, Protestant, there would be forms of seeking out Catholics as well in their local sphere. So anything, Thomas Madden points out, kings often faulted the Inquisition for being too lenient on accused heretics. So as in other areas of ecclesiastical control, secular authorities in the Middle Ages began to take over the Inquisition, removing it from papal oversight. In France, for example, royal officials, assisted by legal scholars at the University of Paris, assumed control of the French Inquisition. These are civil leaders trying to wrestle power from the church by taking over the Inquisitions. Kings justified this on the belief that they knew better than the faraway popes how to best deal with the heresy in their own kingdoms. So anyways, these dynamics did help form the Spanish Inquisition. Spain was in many ways quite different from the rest of Europe. This is something that we have to appreciate in order to appreciate why the Black Legend needs to be revealed for what it is, filled with a lot of myths and understood the legitimate anger and the legitimate bad things that happen might be more easily forgiven by being seen in the context of what the history of Spain was. Of course, Spain was conquered by Muslim jihad in the 700s. So we're going from 700s to the 1400s. Spain was under Muslim control. A lot of people forget about that. As a matter of fact, I had to take another sidebar. I was looking for a movie the other day, too, and in Amazon, you can find a movie on Columbus. And, you know, I've seen it there in the movie lists, and I've been hesitant to watch it because I just said to myself, I know this is going to have an anti-Catholic slant to it. Well, I finally said, well, I'm going to check it out. And I was right, of course. Christopher Columbus, in his days in Spain, is shown the burning of people at the stake, but again, not at all associated with the bigger context. When you read histories of the occupation of Spain, they don't show. One of the punishments that the Christians received was to be skewered on these huge stakes. They would stick a Christian through the backside, and the stake would come out of his mouth, and he would be left to die that way. Horrific things. And of course, that is not shown in a movie about that time, only the burning at the stake to show how bad the Catholic Church was, as it were. So, but because the borders between Muslim and Christian kingdoms throughout those 800 years, mostly they stayed Muslim, but a few times they shifted over the centuries, it was in most rulers' interest to practice a fair degree of tolerance for other religions, namely Muslims, Catholics, and Jewish people. The ability of Muslims, Christians, and Jewish people to live together, called convivencia by the Spanish, living together, was a rarity in Middle Ages. Indeed, Spain was the most diverse and tolerant places in medieval Europe. England expelled all of its Jews in 1290. France did the same in 1306. And of course, it happened in Mexico as well. many other parts of Europe. In Spain, Jewish people were never thrown out. They thrived. Well, I have to take that back. At one point, King Ferdinand did throw out many of the leftover Jews, as it were, but that was after many centuries of living together. As a matter of fact, this was part of the reason for the Spanish Inquisition. It was perhaps inevitable that the waves of anti-Semitism that swept across medieval Europe would eventually find their way into Spain. Envy, greed, and gullibility led to rising tensions between Christians and Jews in the 1300s. During the summer of 1391, urban mobs in Barcelona and other towns poured into Jewish quarters, rounded up Jews, and gave them a choice of baptism or death. Most took baptism. The king of Aragon, who had done his best to stop the attacks, later reminded his subjects of the well-established church doctrine on the matter of forced baptisms. He said, they don't count. He decreed that any Jew who accepted baptism to avoid death could return to the practice of his Jewish faith. Most of the new converts, called conversos, even with the ability to return to Judaism, decided freely to remain Catholic. And there were many reasons for this. Some believed that apostasy made them unfit to be Jewish. In other words, their Jewish friends would never accept them back. They were apostates, and there would be no forgiveness for them. Others worried that returning to Judaism would leave them vulnerable to future attacks. Still others saw their baptism as a way to avoid the increasing number of restrictions and taxes imposed on Jewish people. But as time passed, the conversos settled into their new religion, becoming just as pious as other Catholics. Their children were baptized at birth and raised as Catholics, but they remained in their cultural Jewish world. Although they were Christians, most of these Jewish conversos still spoke, dressed, and ate like Jews. Many continued to live in Jewish quarters so as to be near family and friends. The presence of conversos had the effect of Christianizing Spanish Judaism. This in turn led to a steady stream of voluntary conversions to Catholicism.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
It's incredibly brain-wrinking. And here we come to the birth of the Spanish Inquisition. It's in 1414 that a great debate was held in Tortosa, Spain, between Christians and Jewish leaders. Pope Benedict XIII came to that debate. On the Christian side was the papal physician Jerónimo de Santa Fe, who was himself a conversos, recently converted from Judaism, who embraced Catholicism. And the debate brought about a wave of new voluntary conversions. In Aragon alone, 3,000 Jews received baptism. All of this caused a good deal of tension between those who remained Jewish and those who became Catholic. Spanish rabbis, after 1391, had considered conversos to be Jews, since they had been forced into baptism. So those were the Jewish rabbis who were not Catholic. They saw all those Jewish people who were receiving baptism as being forced into baptism. So yet by 1414, so like some 25 years later, the rabbis repeatedly stressed that conversos were indeed true Christians, since they had voluntarily left Judaism. Kudos for those Jewish rabbis who in a sense, just accepted the Jewish conversos who loved the Mass and embraced Christ, said, no, we are true followers of Christ, though they knew their Jewish history, they knew their Jewish, the Hebrew language and all the rest. You know, that's one of the reasons why, let me throw this as an aside, it's one of the reasons why I like listening to a young theologian, well, he's not that young, but younger than me, so you start saying those things as you get older, by the name of Brant Petrie. He specializes in trying to find Old Testament connections to New Testaments. And of course, Old Testament is where we find the Jewish rituals, the Jewish ideology, the Jewish thinking, and all the rest. And it's amazing how much of Jewish tradition is in the New Testament, in Christianity. So you can kind of see why a Jewish convert to Catholicism would not want to give up his thinking and his ways. I've often said to somebody contemplating, if a Jewish person is contemplating becoming Catholic, even a Protestant, the same theory holds for Protestants to become Catholic. I always challenge them. I say, anything you positively believed as a Jewish person or as a Protestant Christian would be embraced if you became Catholic. In other words, you don't have to deny anything you previously believed if you go from Judaism to Catholicism. What happens is you have to accept new things to believe and go back on what you used to deny. See what I'm saying? When I say you don't deny anything that you positively believed as a Jewish person or as a Protestant Christian, you embrace new doctrine. In other words, you don't have to deny that the Bible is the Word of God. You don't have to deny that there's one God. You don't have to deny that God gave the Ten Commandments to Moses on Mount Sinai. But you will be asked to believe new things like Christ present in the Eucharist, or that God is a trinity of persons. Let me throw this as another aside. One of the other movies I've been watching is the series called Chosen. It's a series that takes an interesting look at the Gospels, but it takes a little part of what we find in the Bible and then fills in lots of gaps. It's very interesting, and I recommend it. The reason it comes to my mind is because they really highlight the figure of Nicodemus. And Nicodemus is the great teacher of teachers of the other rabbis, and yet he sees some holes in the Jewish way, and he's being attracted to Jesus. Remember in the Gospels, it's Nicodemus that helps bury Jesus on Good Friday, right? So anyways, so this is, it's time for another break. I'm just going, before we get to the real heart and soul of the birth of the Inquisition, let's take another little quick break. But don't change that dial. I'm Father Tom Kois. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
This is Bold Talk with Father Thomas Loyola.
The topic of modesty and its epic battles between mom and daughter will once again rise along with the temperatures and crocuses of springtime. It's his responsibility to control himself. As a woman, I will wear whatever I want to wear. Is hardly sensitive, tolerant, enlightened, mutually respectful, or Catholic. St. John Paul II reminded us, the human body is never in itself an occasion for lust. Modesty and purity of heart are based on how the glories of the human body are presented and how they are received. Since God hardwired men to be more visually responsive, especially to womanhood, modesty is simply about asking women to assist men in their duty to perceive and relate to women according to God's design. Modesty in no way shifts the responsibility entirely onto the woman. It is not an objectification, subjugation, or sexualization of women, nor is it gender discrimination or prudishness. Modesty reveals a woman's self-possession, her intelligent awareness of the inherent dignity of her femininity, but also her mature understanding of the fallen side of both masculinity and femininity. I doubt if any young lady would wear leggings instead of a formal gown at her wedding. She knows that it really does matter how she presents her feminine body and through that, her person.
We are the students of St. Stan LaCosta Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560.
773-278-4560. And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stan's needs your help. We are forming a group of volunteers called St. Stan's Cares to help parish and school families in times of need. To join the group or learn more, please contact Brian at 312-343-3222. And we will plan an upcoming virtual meeting to discuss the details. Almsgiving, it's one of the three pillars of Lent. Volunteer with St. Stan's Cares as a means of almsgiving.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coyce here. We are trying to learn more about the Spanish Inquisition. And here we go. It was in like 1450s, the mid-15th century. After this new wave of Jewish Catholics who were not forced into Catholicism, but these conversos were growing and becoming very popular in Spain. So conversos, whether new converts themselves or descendants of converts, took enormous pride in their culture. Some even asserted that they were better than the old Christians or the non-Jewish Catholics, as it were, since as Jews, they were related by blood to Christ himself. When the converso bishop of Burgos, Alfonso de Cartaneja, prayed the Hail Mary, he would say with pride, "Holy Mary, Mother of God, and my blood relative, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen." Isn't that? You can sort of see how the person would be kind of proud about being Jewish and a believer in Christ. And maybe that beckons if Jewish people in the first century had that sense, who knows how history would have changed. Well, we can't go there, but we are in the 14th century now. The expansion of the conversos' wealth and power in Spain. Now, here's where the mob rule starts to come in. Their high positions and wealthy status led to a uprising, as it were. Many of the poor non-Jews resented the arrogance of the conversos, and they envied their success. One of the things that probably contributed to it, but it's not here in this article, was you may or may not know that Catholicism, the Pope spoke against usury. And when you hear that word, maybe you're not sure what it refers to. It primarily means charging interest for money. And of course, excuse me, because the popes spoke against charging interest for loans, a lot of the Catholics then obeyed, and they wouldn't do that. They would have to just loan money and get back what they loaned if they were to get it back. Of course, Jewish people didn't follow the Pope, and that's one of the reasons why Jewish had a bit of an advantage in business transactions. They would lend money and get interest. So you could sort of say that that Jewish influence helped develop our modern notions of banking, how many of us kind of appreciate and enjoy putting money in a bank and getting interest on it, right? It takes money to make money, that's what we say. But anyways, back to the conversos in Spain, there were actually several pamphlets and books written demonstrating that virtually every noble bloodline in Spain had been infiltrated by conversos. So in an era when family lines were so important, especially in nobility, that not only had a lot of effect for kings and who was going to be the next king in a monarchy, but in passing on of a property, right? Of course. So this anti-Semitic conspiracy grew and grew. So the conversos, it was said, were part of an elaborate Jewish plot. Can someone say infiltration, right? To take over the Spanish nobility and the Catholic Church itself, destroying both from within. But of course, they weren't plotting to destroy it. Excuse me. The conversos, according to this logic, were not sincere Christians, but secret Jews. Many of the sincere Jewish people found that offensive, as rightfully they should have. Oh boy, excuse me. Modern scholarship has definitely shown that, like most conspiracy theories, this one was pure imagination. The vast majority of conversos were good Catholics who simply took pride in their Jewish heritage. Wouldn't it be great if we all saw our Jewish heritage? Surprisingly, many modern authors, indeed many Jewish authors, have embraced these fantasies. It is common today to hear that the conversos were really secret Jews, struggling to keep their faith hidden under the tyranny of Catholicism. Even the American Heritage Dictionary describes or defines the word converso as, quote, a Spanish or Portuguese Jew who converted outwardly to Christianity in the late Middle Ages so as to avoid persecution or expulsion, though often continuing to practice Judaism in secret. This, my friends, is false. But the constant drumbeat of accusations convinced even King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella that the matter of secret Jews should at least be investigated. Responding to their request, Pope Sixtus IV issued a bull in 1478 allowing the crown to form an inquisitorial tribunal consisting of two or three priests over the age of 40. As was now the custom, the monarchs would have complete authority over the inquisitors. Ferdinand, who had many Jewish conversos in his court, was not at first overly enthusiastic about the whole thing. Actually, 2 years elapsed before he finally appointed two men, and thus began the Spanish Inquisition. And so we can see that the greater the mob...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
The more this Spanish Inquisition got out of hand, and so the Pope wanted to calm the mob. And that is precisely what we find. That's why I'll end with what I began with. It is so often a go-to historical event when someone is inflicted with the ABC syndrome that anything but Catholicism. Catholicism can't be the answer. Catholicism can't be what it says it is. That is to say, the true church founded by Christ with the fullness of the truth. Well, you're listening to Winds of Change, and we're glad you do. I'm Father Tom Coyce. This is Listener Supported, the Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. See you next time.
So sit on the fence, can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time.